Now, I've been wanting to come out here for some time. I've been out to the studio before, but it was a few years ago now. And I had heard that Mark Cleeter had been doing some work. Let's just say, Mark, this place has changed beyond pretty much all recognition. You have built rooms within rooms and spaces within spaces. We're currently, in fact, you describe where we're standing right now.
Well, this is the live, what is the live room now, which is probably about 10 times as big as the old live room. The reason being that the mixing desk that we bought needed to go in what was the old live room because it was a bigger room than the old control room. So everything got moved around. I bought some roof trusses and that determined the width of it, which is 6 meters. So it's 13 meters long and unlimited height. So it goes all of the way up to the top with this proper pitched roof inside the unit. And that meant that I was after a 0.7 second reverb time. So I know that sounds stupid because of...
Give a click.
There it is. But if I want it to have a big snare sound, for instance, then the room would be completely cleared out. It would just be the drums in here, and they would sound like that Phil Collins sound that everybody wants. You know, and then you put mics everywhere, like up on the balcony up there. And so you can use all different parts of the room to get the sound. So you're not trying to do it electronically. You're genuinely getting the sound of a drum kit in a really, really big room. So it depends on the sort of sound you're after, really. They all sound different.
Yeah.
But then you tune them and you get rid of the rattles because invariably all drum kits rattle. So you've got to get rid of the rattles.
I think you can probably tell from listening to Mark so far. His knowledge is boundless, I have to say. And there's probably a lot of what you're saying that our listener may not quite understand. But that's part of the joy of it, is that this is what you have learned over the years and acquired, the knowledge you've acquired, let alone the gear that you've acquired. Where did it all begin, Mark?
Well, my dad was an electronics engineer, and there was a tape machine actually in the studio in there, which was an old Toshiba, and he bought that two-track tape machine home for me one day to play with, and that was really the first thing I recorded to. I've been using it to, I got it going again, and I've been using it to get some old recordings from 35 years, 40 years ago off it. In those days, it wasn't so easy to get information. There wasn't really anybody to ask. And you just did it until you got it right. And you thought about it and you read about it and you bought the wrong magazines and then the right magazines and books and everything. And through, I don't know, 30 or 40 bands and going off to recording studios in the UK and just wondering how you do it and asking the right people. And of course, I was a professional sound engineer for quite a long time, so you do eventually know what you're doing, and you have a feel for it. I feel like I can see sound. People say they can see, you know, the electricity. When an electronics engineer can almost view the current going through the circuits, and I can't do that, but I feel like I can actually see the sound. So when I do equalization, I know exactly where to go and what to turn and how to turn it down. And usually you turn stuff down. But you only get through that through doing it for years and getting it wrong for a while, I suppose.
See, that's interesting, because I was just about to ask you what in here would be the piece for you, whatever it is, whether it's kit or instruments or whatever, that you hold most dear, you know, whether it's because you mentioned you've still got that bit of kit, which is the thing that where it all started with your dad. But actually, probably the most important thing in this entire place is the knowledge in your brain, isn't it, at the end of the day?
It is a bit of a problem. It is a bit of a problem because nobody realises why this equipment's here, and it all does matter, and each thing has a different sound. The different bass guitars all sound slightly different, and the different guitars are for different purposes, and there's a new Telecaster there that is to get that particular sound. So that the guitar there, designed by Midger, who is obviously a phenomenal musician, and funnily enough, I find that guitar extremely useful. I do. I enjoy playing that, actually.
And we've alluded as well to the large desk that you've had fitted. It's quite a special bit of kit, isn't it?
Yes, it's a Trident Series 80, Model B, from 1983. And it is the actual desk that Rock Me Amadeus was recorded on by Falco. So we found it in Austria. So we've got a photo of Falco actually with it. So wow. It's a bit of a big deal because it's from the early 80s. It's made hits and Rock Me Amadeus sold millions. So it's quite nice to have it there. It's good for the vibe. I mean, from my point of view, it's a large headphone mixer more than anything, because with all the preamps that we have, I don't have to use it. Mm-hmm. And it is excellent to be photographed next to.
So it's something that I think, with regards to that sort of piece of equipment, the desk itself, most people probably wouldn't really understand how important the desk is and how it can actually affect the sound of the recording. But Dave Grohl made a bit of a difference to that when he put out the documentary Sound City about the desk that he rescued. Yes. Didn't he?
Yeah, well, are you setting this up for me? Of course. Well, that was a big old Neve that he bought, and of course he got very, very excited about that mixing desk, and I can understand. I've seen that myself. Mm-hmm. And he understands that you use the proper equipment. And in his case, he was using big old 22-inch 24-track tape machines as well, but with the style of music he does, which is all rock, and he doesn't really have to branch out too much into the other things. That's exactly right. It must just be fantastic. Anything that goes into that desk, the big Neve that he's got, would sound great. But this is in that same, exactly the same arena. There's an awful lot of Trident Series 80s in Nashville, actually. They like it for the country music, for the, you know, the modern sort of Shania Twain style. Yeah. Country music. And yeah, I think a lot of the big indie hits from the mid-90s, the likes of Definitely Maybe by Oasis was done on a Series 80. I think the Blur stuff, some of it anyway. Yeah. It's a desk that, I mean, there's a picture of Fleetwood Mac behind one. So there's a serious piece of kit, and there were only three in the UK, so if we're going to pretend that the Isle of Man is part of the UK, there's now four. Yeah, the rest of them in America.
Well, I think we should go into the control room and listen to some of the music that you have recorded. So, Mark, we've seen the stuff. We've seen the kit that has been recording all kinds of things, and we've talked through some of the magic elements of it. We're going to hear something now. What is it you're going to play for us?
Well, this is a piece of music that we've decided to call Mercury 50, which is being produced by my friend Dean at Bottom Line to put on his YouTube videos that he's planning on putting out. So it's based on something I did in 1991. And I've just tried to rebuild it and tried to, I don't know about bringing it up to date, because nothing I do is up to date. But we'll see how this sounds. We had just turned this on, so I hope it works. We'll be right back.
for a YouTube video, so he's talking over the top. Piano is that CP30 over there, a Fleetwood Mac, that's a Fleetwood Mac sound. And then coming up is a Moog solo from the Mini Moog at the back.
So yeah, how many, because I know you've got various keyboards and synths and things, how many different instruments have you used on that?
I've done an awful lot with just one of the machines by recording it over and over again, the Roland JX8P, which is a machine I know like the back of my hand. So yeah, that's been used for a lot of the background. But there's the Waldorf over there did the bell noises. Obviously the Yamaha CP30, which is from 1974, that was used for the piano. The bass line was actually that Mini Moog. It was going to be this mofo here, but that's turned out to be faulty, so I'm communicating with sequential circuits to get that fixed at the moment. I don't know what's gone wrong with this. It's brilliant for bass, that. You'll hear it in a minute.
Mm-hmm. It's probably a stupid question, but do you have a favourite keyboard or synth here that you think, do you know what, I will always return to, or is it that each of them have a different role to play?
I suppose if it had to be anything, it would have to be that Roland JX8P, which is actually the second one I've had, because I have used one of those since 1986, so I do know it very well. I like the way it feels, and I can make it do a lot of different things. It's just I can get better sounds out of individual machines, which I'm trying to make that sound like. If you hear anything that's done in the box, and I'm often told that I should do things in the box, as soon as anybody...
Just explain what that means for people.
It means if you've got a computer and you've got a digital audio workstation piece of software on your computer, and you've got your plugins, some of which are synthesizer plugins, of which I do have them, you can fiddle around with them, but when you've got the real machines, there's no comparison. They kind of grunt and fart and do little things differently. It's like playing a guitar. The way you bend a guitar and the way it accidentally you catch a string or whatever, you get the same thing out of a real synthesizer as a proper analog synthesizer, not a digital one, a proper analog synthesizer or the real proper electric piano from the time. There's nothing like the real thing. It sounds almost flat if you just use plugins. It doesn't have that organic sound that you would definitely get out of using the real machines. The real machines take up a lot of space and they take a bit of maintenance. You can obviously, as I said, the mofo has gone faulty.
So I guess really the ideal now is, because obviously with digital you have the opportunity for many, many, many channels and many, many different sort of inputs and things that you can use, but using the original instruments as well. It's like getting a happy balance between the two.
Yeah, but the way I seem to be doing it at the moment is I'm playing the synthesizers and recording the MIDI, then I'm perfecting the playing, and then I'm letting the computer play the synthesizer into itself. So I've got a recording of the actual instrument. For all intents and purposes now, certainly with computers that are around now, there's not a limit to the number of tracks, but you don't want all those tracks going at once. It's just useful to be able to switch between them. Mm-hmm. The brain can only cope with three or four things at once. If you've got more than three or four, I mean, you might have your drums, but after that, with the music, you really ought to only have three things and some vocals, maybe four. After that, you've overdone it, because the brain can't take too many melodies all at once. Otherwise, there is no melody. It's just a mush. So you've got to be careful. That's production.
Moon, go to him. goes his way by night. The only road between us is the path of your light. The only way to see him is to give my eyes to you. Oh, moon.
If you were to save one thing from a fire, Mark, what would it be?
That's a very difficult question.
For the love of it, as opposed to the value.
Probably that Mini Moog, because that is signed by Bob Moog, and he died soon after signing it, 3 months after. So I'd have to rescue that because it's limited edition. You couldn't get another one. There's only 60 of those in the world, so it'd have to be the Mini Moog, I think.
So and to be fair, that's regardless of the value. It's the fact that you're not going to get that sound.
You can't do that again. Anything else you could effectively replace, but you can't replace that because you can't get. There's only 60 of them, and he's signed it. He checked it and he signed it. So there's so many things in here, though, that have a little bit of provenance, and I can't lift the mixing desk. So it'd have to be the it'd have to be that Moog over there, I think. Let's not have a fire. That's the best. That's probably the answer.
The only road between us is an old road of stone. The only way to hold him is to give my heart to. Oh, moon, go to him and hold him like I do.
Desk, for instance, is a serious bit of kit, and it does sound like a serious bit of kit. It does tend to make things a bit easier when your source material is sounding spot on to start with. The mixes still have to be done very carefully, and they don't happen easily, as we're all getting deafer and you have to check it on all the speakers and you're never quite sure what it's going to sound. It's all the same old stuff. Listen in the car, walk around the corner, have a listen in the room outside, see if it still sounds. It's no different than it was. Doesn't matter how good the monitors are, it still never seems to be quite right. You're never ever happy, but you sort of sign it off effectively and it goes to wherever it's meant to go, and that's often the end of it, often.
The only road. And bring him home to me.
I guess as well, there's something quite encouraging about the fact that there seems to be a new interest amongst younger musicians in vintage, retro, old, you know, that sort of, there seems to be a resurgence in that now. And that's got to be encouraging.
Well, I hope there is. Most people obviously just have the plugins on their computers, so I suppose that might be what's causing the interest. So people have seen pictures of these units, and so and that they, for instance, the Trident Series 80, there are certainly plugins of equalizers to try to get the sound of that mixing desk, for instance.
Yeah.
So I would say it's because you can buy the plugins with the pictures that you learn what the models of the equipment are. But of course, I come from the era where you just have to have the right equipment in the first place. And though I do have plenty of plugins, I tend to not have plugins for the equipment that I've got in the racks.
Yeah.
And if you wanted to do a change 20 years ago, or even maybe, well, 15 to 20 years ago, then you had to recreate a mix on the mixing desk, which is a tall order. To get it exactly the same, you'd make notes while you were doing the mix, but then to try and get back, you never got back the same. Whereas now you can just fire your computer back up again, bang, it's all up there, and if they just want the vocals half a dB lower in a certain point, you can do that. So that's economic.
When the summer birds will sing their evening song, and all its lust is lost, and all its beauty is gone, you've got a hold. You've got to hold on.
So of the all these wonderful bits of kit, is there something that has eluded you so far that you would really like in here? Whether it be instrument or kit, is there anything you desperately want to add to this that you've not been able to get hold of?
More very expensive microphones. I think that's it. Microphones are the thing. We've got nice microphones, but some microphones, some vintage ones, could be £5,000 or £10,000. But the sound, again, of those, there's a definite sound to a vintage microphone, which I'd quite like to have. But that's pretty hard to justify for what is effectively a fractional change. So that is a...
You can hear it, but other people might not be able to.
I don't think anybody would ever know, really. You'd know that you'd done everything you possibly could to make it as good as it possibly can be, right down to using a vintage microphone. Uh-huh. But I don't think anybody else would ever appreciate that you'd done that.
So do you think then that because we're now in that era of listening to things on phones and listening to things on computers, do you think that maybe people's ears have become less interested, if you know what I mean, in this sort of diversity of sound, or less cultured in a way? Or do you think because actually, as I've said, there has been that sort of resurgent interest in maybe vintage instruments for whatever reasons you might have suggested, and also vinyl, that actually there is still cause for it, and there is still, you know, sort of reason to go this far with the precision of the different elements?
That's an interesting question. The problem is, if you don't produce properly and make a good sound, then even on an iPhone, it still sounds rubbish.
Yeah.
You do have to mix differently on when you know it's going to likely get heard mostly on an iPhone speaker, because that just isn't hi-fi. But they do sound remarkably good, and people have become used to listening to it. But there's no bass, so what you have to do is you have to consider the bass frequencies, and... You hide some lower ones, or you enhance some slightly higher bass frequencies to try to make them stand out, so you can at least hear the bass notes on an iPhone. So if you think it's going to get used on that, you really need to tailor the mix really to the smallest speakers you've got. We've got some Auratones there. So if it sounds all right on the Auratones, and there's a few other speakers around here that I use. There's that one there, which is something... I don't know,
Very pretty rubbish out of
Asda, I think. Again, it's a bit like an iPhone. It's plugged in using Bluetooth, but it has compromised the sound. If you did put it into a lovely sound system, then the mix, unfortunately, has been compromised. But the chances are more people are going to want to listen to it on their iPhones or iPads. They're more likely to be listening on those than something fancy these days. So all the poor engineers are now having to think about where it's going to be listened to in
trying to cover all bases, which has got to be almost impossible.
Well, it is impossible. It's definitely impossible. Yeah. But what you've got to do is just do your best, and the mixes do get altered to suit that. With all the choir CDs and orchestral CDs that I have done with Charles Gard for many, many years, all the way through the 90s and the 2000s, where we were very, very careful over dynamic range and quality recording and good rooms and things like that. And then you find that these days, everybody wants to listen to it on an iPhone or something like that, and you've just got to compress the hell out of it until everything can be heard on the smaller speaker, because the quietest things can't be heard anymore, so they have to be turned up.
Yeah.
And that's the dynamic range gone. So it's a bit of a shame.
I am a thousand winds that blow. I am the softly falling snow. I am the gentle showers of rain. I am the fields of ripening grain.
And with the size of this room as well, you know, you could fit choirs, you could fit, you know, small orchestras, couldn't you, when it comes down to it?
Well, I had a choir. I did have a Glenn Faber choir in here last year and the year before. I think it was 35 of those. I spent a lot of money on chairs, actually, because it was quite evident that they would want to sit down. There was a lot of people to accommodate. In fact, there's a tea urn upstairs, because I realised that the kettle would probably give in. Trying to make 35 cups of tea within 10 minutes is not going to happen. So there's a tea urn for that particular job.
Thank you.
So if you were, I mean, this is, again, quite a cruel question probably, but if you were to think back to one of your favouritist projects, and not necessarily just in here, but over the years that you've worked on, would you be able to pinpoint that?
It's always the last one that you've been on. So I've been recording an old band of mine called the Time Bandits recently, so I've enjoyed doing that. And before that, I think it was the Simon Gilman work that I did. So at that time, that seemed the most important. To be honest, it's whatever you're working on at the time is the most important, and you've forgotten about everything else you've done. It often amazes me when I listen back at the different projects, and you might listen to something and you dread listening to something from 15 years ago or 20, thinking, oh, this is going to be rubbish. But it always seems all right, luckily. It seems that you've always been, if I've always been striving to make things sound right, and it looks like when we look back at the old recordings and they're still there. Mm-hmm. Even that old one I played you from 1991 that I'm recreating, actually, that probably would have done back then. I knew that I wanted to use a Moog, so now I've used a Moog. Most people wouldn't care, would they?